BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Five Lives, Rugby Union Daily.
Rugby Union Daily Super Saturday is here, the grand finale of the 2024 Six Nations. And what a day it promises to be on this final pod before the big off. You will hear from Manu Tuilagi ahead of quite possibly, probably, very likely to be his last ever performance in an England shirt. But first, delighted to say we've been joined here in the Aviva Stadium by the Scotland co-captain, Rory Darge. Rory, thanks so much for giving us your time so close to the game. How much motivation is there in this group to right the wrongs of Rome?
Huge amount. I think, as you mentioned there, right the wrongs of Rome, it was a tough start to the week in terms of the reviews and going through that process. But quickly, you know, the focus turned to Ireland. I think massive amount of motivation, not just for that reason, but also first time Scotland can win a Triple Crown. And I think 30-odd years that we've got an opportunity to do that. So, yeah.
When you come to a place like the Aviva, does it hold any kind of fear factor for a Scotland player, given it's been so long since you won here?
I don't think I'd say fear. I think, you know, there is a part of it. It's going to be a hostile environment. As you said, the record, I think it was 2010. It's a tough place to come and get a result. Depends what way you take it. Like, you want to, as a sports person or a professional sports person, go into these environments that are the best. And, you know, they've proved, I think, over the last however long that, if they're not the best team in the world, they're certainly up there. So, you know, for me, that's exciting rather than a fear thing.
Give us a few areas that you've got to get right as a Scotland team to beat Ireland away from home.
I think, as always, Ireland are world-class around the breakdown. They're happy to go deep into the phase counts, really try and eke those sort of defensive errors or penalties out of you. So, you know, that's certainly something that we need to work on, and not just in this game. I think it's something that the discipline side of things we could have been better at in previous games as well. So there's two big areas right there.
You've played some lovely rugby this Six Nations, but also had periods where you've dropped off, not least in that sort of second half against Italy. Has that been something you've explicitly talked about, how to keep that intensity going for the whole game?
Yeah, and I think, you know, within the group talking about what we can do once we're in those situations, I think going back to the basics and really what makes us work and breaking it down. And then, you know, we've now got things that once we've realised we're in those sort of periods where maybe we're on the wrong side of the referee or we're just not getting our plays how we would like to, real easy, simple things we can go back to.
Yeah, how does that work? Is it about sort of trying to have a clear head in the heat of the battle and sort of try to calm things down and, you know, the leaders really taking ownership?
Yeah, I think that's part of it is, you know, clear head, clear focus on what you need to do as an individual, and what your role is.
Yeah. What have you learned from your recent games against Ireland, particularly that one at the World Cup where there was so much hype, so much build-up, a fair bit of confidence going into it, but you weren't able to put your best game out there?
Yeah, I think, you know, we also had that with Glasgow, as I mentioned in that press conference there, was the feeling after the game that you've not put your best performance out there, or to be honest, nowhere near our best performance out there. We felt like we didn't shoot our shots, so fire any shots. So we've had a lot of learnings around the mental area and a lot of growth, I think. Still a lot of growth to get. But yeah, I think we're in a better place because that's a mental piece for me.
Yeah, and just on that, in terms of the mental part and trying to prove this Scotland team are going in the right direction, how important is it to be in the game? Not have a situation like the World Cup where things are done and dusted at half time, but you can hang in there, you can fight, and you can take Ireland right to the well.
Yeah, I think that's all, you know, on how we start, obviously. I think we definitely didn't get a good start against Ireland in the World Cup. And I think this campaign we've showed we can start well. What we've not done is then shown that we can keep it up for, you know, we've had, as I said, big growths mentally, you know, in that Wales game, being able to show that even though they're coming back into it, then we can go and see it out. After a tough loss against France, you know, being able to go and beat England. But as you said, it's about starting well and then, you know, for us, making sure that we prove that we can just stay in it for the full 80.
Well, best of luck. Thanks so much for talking to us, Rory. Cheers.
Thanks very much.
Thank you. Right, Rory Darge, the Scotland co-captain, off to put the final touches on his preparation. And who else were we going to talk to ahead of Ireland against Scotland than a man who bestrides this fixture like a colossus? Tom English, Irish by birth, Scottish by nurture? How would you describe it?
Well, Scottish people say by grace of God. No, it's I wouldn't say I'm nice to be home, because home is a lot further south than here. It's Limerick. But yeah, no, I've been in this stadium quite a few times with my Scottish CU Jimmy hat on, and it hasn't ended too well.
So anything you heard from Rory Darge there to convince you Scotland have got something special in them at the Aviva come 4:45?
No. You know, what's like, talk is cheap, isn't it, Chris? You know, talk is cheap. And we get
that's kind of what we do for a living, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Particularly me.
That's slightly demeaning our whole raison d'etre.
But you know, but ahead of this, I mean, he could have come in and said, oh, you know, we're going to really put it up to Ireland and we're going to do this and we're going to do that.
But they made that mistake ahead
of... It's all nonsense, you know?
But they did that ahead of the World Cup game, didn't they?
Yeah,
they talked a big game. It's kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Yeah, Blair Kinghorn did. He said a few things I probably shouldn't have said, but I could kind of understand why he said them. In the Netflix documentary, you know, for this, the episode that focused on this game last year, Gregor Townsend said a few things. The best of us beats every team in the world. Really? There was Stuart Hogg said stuff about Ireland. It's all, you know, none of it came to pass. So it's impossible for Rory Darche to say anything that's going to influence tomorrow. Tomorrow is when it's... They've got to prove it on the pitch, and they haven't. For 9 games in a row, Scotland have not done it. And, you know, a lot of those games, they haven't been close.
And that's the big challenge, problem, issue is, can you map a path to Scottish victory? Do Scotland have that 80 minutes of intensity? Because we saw at Twickenham that even if Ireland aren't at their best, they're still going to be almighty hard to shake off, especially in this place. And that's where... You have those question marks about Scotland. Sure, they can play some lovely rugby, but can they do it for long enough at the right intensity to cause a scare?
You can never say never, but I haven't seen it from them. You know, you look at the history of this fixture over those 9 games. You have 9 Ireland wins. You have 1 game that was kind of close. What you have as well, you have a lot of those games where Scotland fall out of the games for long periods, score no points, and the game goes away from them. So say last season, they played well for 40 minutes, but they didn't score any points for 63 minutes in that game. You know, so they just fall out. Same in the World Cup. Same in quite a few of those games, in those 9 defeats in a row. They just kind of fade away, and Ireland build a lead, and it's insurmountable. So they can't fade away tomorrow. They have to stay in the fight. They have to build the scoreboard. And if they don't, we know what's going to happen.
So turning attention to Ireland, Tom, this kind of conversation about greatness I found really fascinating this week. It's been spoken about in the Irish media. We touched on it on our Thursday night show on 5 Live. I felt Ireland, despite their World Cup travails, could have taken a big step towards greatness by going back-to-back with slams.
Yeah.
I don't think necessarily back-to-back titles will do that. So do you think anything that happens at the Aviva Saturday afternoon can cement their legacy, or will that come this summer, maybe in South Africa? Or are they going to be known as a very, very, very good side, but not one that were able to cement their status as the greatest Six Nations side because they weren't able to emulate what France did in the 90s?
I would say to go Grand Slam and Championship would make them a great Irish side. But a great rugby side, I would set the bar higher. And I think you do have to go Grand Slam, or you have to win a World Cup. Ideally, I would set the bar at that level. Can you be considered a great side if you've not won a World Cup? I'm not so sure. But a lot of people will debate that. You could go Grand Slam, no World Cup. You know what I mean? It's a hard thing to define.
It's good. It's great. I love the kind of chat. But
it's a really, really hard thing to define.
I just think Grand Slam wouldn't have made up for the fact that they didn't get where they wanted to go at the World Cup. But it would have made them the greatest, potentially, I think probably, the greatest Six Nations side, because that great England side just won the one slam. They obviously won the World Cup to establish themselves as a great all-time rugby side. But it would have been them... It would have made Ireland, I think, the greatest Six Nations side. So I've just not been able to do that, but a chance to go back-to-back with titles, which isn't too shabby.
No, I mean, I think if you go Grand Slam Championship, that is... sometimes I feel that there is a sense, almost a sense of entitlement about the Irish rugby fan. People kind of going, it's not a Grand Slam, therefore, who cares? No, it could be a championship. It could be a Grand Slam followed up by a championship. You've backed it up. You haven't backed it up with a Grand Slam, but you have backed it up.
Farrell would have taken that post the World Cup.
Totally.
Do you think? Yeah.
Absolutely. In a heartbeat. So, you know, just because it's not a Grand Slam doesn't mean it's devalued. It's not as good, but it's still damn good. This is a fine, fine Irish team. And obviously what England did to them last weekend has kind of really made people, I would say, quite lose the run of themselves, but I think they've overreacted. That was a great, great England performance. And there is no divine right for Ireland to win every single game, but maybe it's felt like that over the last couple of years.
Mm. Yeah, good teams, great teams can lose, can't they?
Yeah, of course they can. And this is an excellent team. But yeah, the whole thing, what makes a great team?
Yeah, I just think it's I think they weren't quite able to do something really, really special, because the back-to-back titles has been done as recently as 14 and 15.
Yes.
So when we're commentating on the game tomorrow, it's not going to be kind of, oh, wow, what an achievement, because Ireland did it 9 years ago.
Yeah.
So, I think that's where this tour, I mean, looking too far ahead, this tour of South Africa has so much intrigue, because come 2027, I don't think all of this Ireland crop will still be going.
No.
There's a fair few guys here, whether it's Jamison Gibson-Park or Bundy Aki, Peter Amani himself, yep, clearly someone like Kian Healy, Tyke Furlong, you know, that'd be 32. They'll be knocking mid-30s by that time. Johnny Sexton showed us what is possible. So I just think that puts even more onus on the here and now for this crop, doesn't it? Because they can't be thinking too far ahead, because I think that the team is just, it's aging perhaps a bit quicker than people might have realised.
It is, but the flip side is that the under-20s, they're a conveyor belt of talent. So there is, you know, some stellar players are going to be moving on pretty soon, but there's some very, very exciting players coming through in their stead, you know. So it's the Irish rugby is in a very, very good place, for sure. It's not going to be a Grand Slam at the start of it. Well, you know, in the Nations pod at the start of the championship, I'm saying if Ireland finish a strong second, given it's the post-Sexton era, given Joe McCarthy's just coming into the team, a guy who I think could be a very special player, it's a little bit of transition. I would have said a strong second. I'm very happy with that. Mm. They've gone better than that. Mm. And they almost, despite the fact that they were thoroughly outplayed at Twickenham, they nearly won the thing. You know, I mean, watching it again, I'm going, how are Ireland still in this game? Because England are so much better. They are a terrific team, and I fully expect them to go and win the championship now.
So before we hear from Manu Tuilagi, we'll talk also Wales, Italy in a sec. You were bullish about Ireland's chances at Twickenham.
Was I?
Unfortunately, the trouble with doing this kind of stuff is it's recorded for forever.
Maybe a little bit.
You're more bullish about their chances against Scotland here.
Yes, I am. Because I think what England did to Ireland in terms of the physicality side of it, I don't think Scotland can do that. Or they can't sustain it for anything like 60, 70, 80 minutes. That's what the current form and past form would tell you. So, I mean, Ireland are like, you know, 7-1 on or something to win this game. Almost unbackable favourites to win this game. I think that's a little bit disrespectful to Scotland. But Scotland win a lot of their games on the back of individual moments of brilliance. Not necessarily always by the collective, the strong collective. And that's where Ireland win their games. Mm-hmm. They win a game through constant pressure, suffocating pressure, rather than one of them running 60 metres downfield and scoring a try, as Duane van der Merwe does kind of routinely. So I find it very difficult to see Scotland delivering the kind of performance that will beat this team going for a championship.
Right, more from here in Dublin in a sec, but let's go to Lyon, where Sarah is joined by Manu Tuilagi, one of the great servants of English rugby, ahead of what looks like his last appearance in an England shirt, and that is all the other side of this.
Pep Guardiola,
a perfectionist,
a tactical genius,
the best manager of his generation,
the best manager in history.
Reserve team coach Pep Guardiola, a popular former player at the Nou Camp, will take over from Rijkaard.
This is a podcast all about the man who has shaped the modern game.
It feels almost as if he's solved the riddle, if he's cracked the code for football.
From his history in La Masia to dominating football across Europe.
He's brought a brand of football to the Premier League that we've never seen before.
Everybody plays like Pep's teams now.
From football, he takes you to heaven.
from BBC Five Life.
Sporting giants, Pep Guardiola.
Listen on BBC Sounds.
Welcome to the Rugby Union Daily, Manu Tuilagi. Let me go backwards first, Manu, because last time we saw England play at Twickenham, the place was bouncing. I know you didn't play, but were there any memories there of 2012, your intercept try?
for me, you know, watching the boys last weekend was amazing and probably one of the best games I've watched at Twickenham. I was watching at home with my family and I was screaming and cheering at the TV. I think I nearly I made my baby jump because he was asleep. So it was, to see that, you know, so satisfying. So for us as a team, you know, we take that and take another step forward.
Just taking that feeling that you have watching, what did it mean to you when Steve said, OK, you're in the 23 this week?
Exciting for me to, you know, get the opportunity again to, you know, to wear the jersey. It's amazing. So I'm really thankful for it.
You say you're thankful for it. Everyone, including yourself more than anyone, it's well documented the injuries you've had. You missed out on 2016 with the Grand Slam match at France. You were an unused sub, weren't you? You didn't come on.
No,
is that right?
I didn't.
What was the atmosphere like in that moment?
Amazing. You know, I remember the crowd was loud, the atmosphere. It's just where you want to be. So, you know, I've had some amazing memories and, you know, tomorrow we'll go out there and make some more.
How gutted are you that Pasolo Tuilagi, your nephew, is not playing?
Yeah, he always got it. I spoke to my brother to see, you know, if he's playing because I knew he was sick last week. So I don't know if he was back fit this week. So, but yeah, you know, I'm so happy for him. I'm so proud of him that to where he is, because he's a good lad. And for me, that's, it's good to see.
Is there a part of you that is happy? I mean, the Tuilagi name has given so much to rugby union across the whole world. What does it mean to you that he is that youth that's coming through?
It's a proud moment for me, you know, as I'm his uncle and, you know, his dad and my mum. My mum was here as well for his debut. So, you know, so proud, and I wish him all the best. And if he keeps going the way he is now, he'll go a long way.
How many Tuilagis are coming to the game on Saturday night?
I think I've got 10 tickets.
Nice. So, do you need more? Is this an appeal right now?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. And of the 10, how big an extended fan are we talking? Because people who don't know, you've got six...
Yes.
Six brothers and sisters?
Yeah.
Seven?
There's nine of us.
Nine of you in total, right.
So we'll be my brothers, my mum, my sisters, my brothers' wives, my nephews. Yeah, I think that's it, my nephews.
There's a huge number of Tuilagis in presence. Now, listen, I've just been sat in your press conference. I know you don't want to talk about whether this is the last time we're going to see you in an England shirt, so I will say that. You don't have to. But I did want to ask you, if we go back to 2011, you're named in that World Cup squad, you get your debut in that warm-up game against Wales ahead of the World Cup. How different are you a player today to what you were back in 2011?
Well, obviously I'm a bit older now than back then, a long time, but, you know, the feeling's still very much the same as when Steve told me that I'll be involved this week. So the excitement, and I don't think it'll ever change. So for me, I can't wait.
Your USP has always been your physicality. With all the injuries you've had, has there ever been a moment where you have been hesitant to take that contact or just hold back in some way, or is the hunger just there as much as ever?
I think with rugby, you know, you can't be like that. Or my mindset cannot change because of what's happened. So for me, I love it.
Part of loving it is you do have two sides to you. England rugby fans, they know you on the field. They know what you deliver week in, week out. But how much is this other side of you? You're so happy and smiling in front of me right now. Most people think of you, they think of flip-flops, I think that's fair to say. It's very rare. You're actually wearing trainers, I'm quite surprised at right now. A lot of snooker as well to switch off.
Yeah, if I can be in flip-flops, I'll be in it every day. And I am at home. Yeah, I love snooker as well. I think it's a great game. They brought in this new rule now with the golden ball. So instead of 147, 167, and still no one's done it yet. So I think John Higgins was close last time, but just missed the yellow.
Because you go to the Crucible, don't you, with your family?
Yeah, I've been a field of boys.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping to hopefully go back there, I think, hopefully this year.
And just on that, I mean, does this mean you're quite good at snooker? Because I know you used to switch off. I know that you've got family commitments and children now, so probably time playing snooker is limited. No. But in England camp, can you hustle a bit?
We go play quite a bit when we're in camp at the Sovereign. The thing is in Farnborough.
Okay.
So we got, it's only 15 minutes, so me, a few other boys, Genji, Dickie.
Are they any good?
They're very good.
Problem.
Dickie, Ben Earl, Chez, Ethan.
Are you trying to tell me, shocker, Ben Earl wants to play a sport?
Oh, he's
he loves
good at
it all, doesn't he?
Yeah. Him and Dickie, they're very good. The boys are in darts as well.
Okay.
Darts competition in the team room. So it's good, I mean, to switch off completely.
Well, talk about switching off. Let's just switch on one more time. What's your message to all the England fans who are going to see you pull on that England shirt in Lyon Saturday, 8 o'clock?
For me, I just want to say thank you for supporting us. You know, that support, we can feel it. We see it. You know, it adds on that that bit of energy for us because we can feel it. So thank you so much for keep supporting us. It means a lot.
Manu, we wish you all the best on Saturday. Thank you so much for your time. Let's get back to Chris.
Thank you.
Cheers, Sarah. Great to have Manu Tuilagi on the pod ahead of France against England. What do you think about that one, Tom? Tom English here in the Aviva Stadium.
What do I think about what?
France against England. You're focused on the job in hand, which is...
What do you think about Manu Tuilagi? I think he's been an amazing player. France, England. See, people now are going to say, all right, you're going to jump on the England bandwagon now after slagging them off for 2 or 3 years. And I am. If there's room. Is there room? There's a room on that England bandwagon for me.
Okay.
Because I think they amazed me. And we said on the pod during the week, I obviously couldn't see England winning that game. They did. They won it far more comprehensively than the scoreline will tell you. If they can produce, and this is a big if, Chris, you know, there was an awful lot of emotion, an awful lot of anger in that performance against Ireland. If they can replicate that, I think they're good enough to beat France, without question. France, you could say, are improving a little bit. Still not convinced by them. That would be an amazing achievement for England to turn over Ireland and then France.
After Murrayfield, who would have called that?
After Murrayfield. Sure. I mean, this is the kind of... the mysteries of the Six Nations Championship. And I cannot, and I've been around forever, but I struggle to remember a turnaround in performance from England at Murrayfield to England at Twickenham against Ireland. It was like 23 different players. It was just incredible. Everything that England did pretty much was excellent against Ireland.
And, yeah, as we chatted about through the week, now the challenge for England is to do that with the contrasting build-up, not the anger from being written off. And
yes.
He said this and she said that and they've said that, which make no mistake, spurred the England players on. You know, Ben Earl said on our pod a few days back, oh yeah, I read it all, seen it all.
Good for him for saying that.
Revealed on his pod that, you know, through the World Cup, they would pick out tweets, you know, the England coaches, all these little, you know, they said, oh, it's a bit of fun. But look, the fact is that motivated them.
Yeah.
Absolutely, no doubt about it. Now they've had a week of praise.
Yes.
And remember when they had a big win against France in 2021 and got a load of praise and Eddie Jones called it poison. You might remember that. He goes, you guys, I remember interviewing him and he pointed and goes, you guys fill their heads with poison. I thought, hold on, we've been really nice. And he was like, that's the point. Too nice. So look, there is this thing with England that their best performances crossing both the Borthwick and Jones' era have been when they're written off. Have been when their backs are against the wall. You know, Argentina in the World Cup, that opener, a famous win with Ford's drop goals, and then you know, that South Africa game where they took South Africa right to the edge, and then clearly this Ireland game. So, yeah, that's for me the kind of imponderable, whether England can get to that level. I still make France favourites here, but I still don't think it's... I still think England emerge from the Six Nations in credit, even if they lose on Saturday night, because I think the Ireland game has given the England fans real faith in the future under this regime. Yep. They've seen what the future can look like, and they've gone, yeah, we like that. Yep. I still think going to Lyon and beating this France side, or back to winning ways, I still think that is a really tough ask. You know, England haven't won in France since 2016. So I make France the fairly clear favourites here, but I still think that unless they take a pounding, that Ireland game has really salvaged their campaign. And their three wins from five haven't been two wins from five the previous 3 years. And it's really shown what this regime, what this England group can do. So yeah, I don't quite share your confidence England are going to win. I think the performance really is operative here.
This is complete role reversal, isn't it? You saying I don't think England will win, and I'm saying no, no, no. Stop talking down England, Chris.
Have some respect. He's a good player. Yeah. No. I would always back England at Twickenham, especially when they're angry, written off.
Yeah,
it's just different now, right. And they're away in France, and I know that you know France would you know post away from losing at home to Italy, but I still think France away, you know, with this pod with Martin Johnson when he outlined what it's like to play in France. Like, I think if you're torn on a game, you back the home side, especially if it's France in France. So for me, I'm just fascinated by this England performance. But do they go with that attacking intent? Can they execute that attacking intent away from home without Faye Wabosa, without one of their sort of X-factor carriers in traffic? So really excited for this game, even if come Saturday night, it might well have nothing explicitly on it.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. And it's a game for obviously for the here and now, but it's also a game for the future. If you look at for both countries, but particularly for England, can they back it up? If they can back it up without Faye Wabosa, who's terrific against Ireland, wow, then it's getting exciting. Then it's gone from navel gazing after Murrayfield and like, woe is us, and what are they doing? Their game plan, what are they trying to play?
Bring on the All Blacks.
Bring on the All Blacks. Yeah. Let's have a bit of them. And it's the transformation. And I'm maybe getting a bit ahead of myself here. But that performance...
That's your love of English rugby coming through, Tom.
Well, as you know, I mean, I've hidden it.
You've done a very good job at disguising it. Yeah.
I've done a very, very good job of hiding it. That's the kind of good an actor I am, you know. Really, I've loved this team. But what I saw, even though they were beating Ireland, I loved that England performance. I loved everything about it. I loved the aggression of it, the tempo that they played at, the ambition that they played with. And I think if they can, that is the big thing. Can they muster whatever inspired them, anger, fear, all of those things against Ireland, if they bring them to France, all of those facets to France, I think it could be a hell of a game. It could be an amazing game. And if England win that, then you're talking, okay, right, they have turned a corner. You can't beat Ireland and then beat France and say, we haven't turned a corner. Yeah. They will have definitely turned a corner.
That's a statement and a half, total isn't it? Statement at Twickenham against Ireland. It's a double statement to win in France. Yeah. And as we saw in Marseille, amazing French crowd at the start. You can still quieten a French crowd, even though this is a French crowd more in love with their team than, say, 10 years ago. But you can still keep them quiet, as Ireland showed on night one, which feels months ago, doesn't it? We haven't probably given Wales, Italy enough airtime this week. So let's do a little bit on it now. Mm-hmm. Again, I mean, wooden spoon on it, loads of intrigue. Gatland's selections under the microscope with that rookie bench, especially in the front row. He's brought back George North, who's then leaving the international scene. Yeah. No Ange Capuozzo, who starred in his amazing break, won the game for Italy a couple of years ago. Where's your head at with that one?
I don't know.
Yeah, it's hard, isn't it?
I don't know, it's hard. But I'll tell you this, if Italy win this game, I am making them the team of the championship.
Yeah, that's fair.
Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would. Yeah,
that would be extraordinary. Like, you know, half an hour into the game against Scotland last weekend, Scotland are three tries up. All Scotland's players are playing well. Italy, the crowd is quiet. Record crowd, 70,000 odd. Quiet. All you could hear the bagpipes, you could hear all the Scottish fans, you couldn't hear the Italians. Their mental strength to find their way back into that game and to put the pressure on and then Scotland imploded was incredibly impressive. Now, I know Capuozzo's missing, and they're not the same team that they're going to beat Scotland, but I still give them a got a big, big chance. Mm. What a great opportunity. The stadium, Chris, after that game was electrifying. You know, it was amazing. And it's great, obviously bad for Scotland, but brilliant for the Six Nations. It was a kind of a magic moment, and I was there type of occasion. It meant a huge amount to them.
Yeah, and then conversely for Wales, I don't think they're going to fall into the trap they fell into 2 years ago. Do you remember there was a bit of a party atmosphere around Alan Wynn breaking a Caps record, Dan Biggar's 100th? They felt a bit as if the eye was taken off the ball. That might be unfair, but that's just the vibe.
Yeah.
They switched off Wales when they thought they had the game won, and they were stung at the end. They're not going to make that mistake because they know this is a different Italy team coming for them. If Wales go 0-5, does pressure ratchet up on Warren Gatland? Do you think he's playing, you know, a clever game here in terms of giving people experience and doing what he needs to do to try and evolve this team?
I don't think there's going to be pressure. I think people are realistic. The Welsh rugby crowd are demanding. Grow, our beloved colleague on the Nations podcast, reckons there is patience there, that there is an appreciation that this is a big rebuild, and I'm not sure if they've got the artillery to rebuild properly to get back to where they were. I mean, this could be a long period here where Wales are kind of bottom half of the table. If they go 0-5, wow, I mean, that would be a story, wouldn't it, as well? And I think there's every chance of it.
And the trouble Gatland might have post-match is he will cite inexperience. But if you look at the Caps tally, Ross Petty posted about it, they're pretty similar, Italy and Wales. And Italy have had injuries themselves, and you know they're missing one of their stars. And Gatland has chosen to pick that inexperienced front row bench. So it's that balance, isn't it? Yes, trying to find some diamonds in the rough, trying to give people experience. But this is not a kind of Italy side, you know, absolutely bursting with caps, is it? Or an Italy side that's coming
with, you
know, titles under their belt. It's still a game that the Welsh rugby public will expect to be winning.
Yeah, they will. Absolutely, they will. Losing the first four, I'm not saying they'll accept it, but I think people still are kind of stuck in a place where losing to Italy is a disaster. And Italy are much better than that now. Previously, it's kind of, you lost to Italy.
I think you may have used the word disaster after Scotland's defeat by Italy, did you not?
I was very emotional. I was myself.
Yeah, yeah, you've rewatched the game. No, I take your point.
Well, I think it was, well, if I did, I may have used it in the context of that it was a disastrous Scottish performance. It was an implosion. And Italy were obviously...
And in the context of beating England so handsomly.
And like Scotland back to square one, people thought Scotland were kind of moving forward. They weren't. That was a kind of a nightmarish scenario. But this Italy team now, this is a good side. And I know they're missing one or two, but this is a good side, well capable of beating Wales.
Conversely, a big Wales win if they pull it off. It'd be a very handy win for Wales.
Oh yeah,
given the
it would.
Context.
And, and like you look at Gatland, I have a certain element of admiration for him for sticking to his guns and going young. Bringing in all these players. Someone could say it was kind of reckless. You could look at it as brave. He's saying, right, okay, we're just going to forget about the Six Nations. This is about the future, and I'll take whatever flack is coming my way, even if we go, 0-5, I'll take that, because next season and the season after will be better because of it. We'll see.
We shall see in Cardiff. We shall see here in Dublin. We shall see over in Lyon as well. A great Super Saturday awaits us, hopefully. Three brilliant games. You can hear them all on Five Sports Extra, Five Live, or BBC Sounds. The Wales game is on Sports Extra. Then our coverage rolls into the Ireland-Scotland game, where we start on Sports Extra, go over to Five Live at the end of 3 o'clock footballs, and then we take that all the way through to the England game. So you will not miss a thing with us. Rugby Union Daily on the whistle. Big weekend review coming Monday morning with John, Sam and Ugo. From Tom English, from all of us here at the Aviva Stadium. See you tomorrow.
The drama.
They're having to be separated. They've both been shown the red card.
The entertainment.
And it's
the superstars.
Foden! Oh, yes!
What a goal.
Welcome to the Planet Premier League podcast. I'm Mark
Chapman, and every week, Cesc Fabregas, Nader Manua and myself talk all things Premier League.
They have this dynamism and this quality that they can play anywhere. They need to prove themselves in scoring more and more and more goals.
I think if they don't win the title this year, the season is a failure in the league.
Planet Premier League. Listen on BBC Sounds.